Welcome to One Bills Light, your no snooze button allowed version of One Bills Live, where we dive headfirst into everything Bills and put a bow on it in about 40 minutes. Steve and I address the idea of trading late draft capital for future picks. I see what Steve knows about pick 61 history in the numbers game, and Dane Brugler breaks down edge rushers and corners that could be in range for the Bills in rounds one and round two. Let's get on the clock!
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. Thank you for joining us here on One Bills Light, available on all your podcast platforms and on YouTube, where you can watch and listen. With the draft less than a week away, Steve and I have somehow found another angle to discuss that has yet to be addressed, and it deals with Buffalo's roster as it's currently constituted, and it builds off a big to-do item that is coming down the pike. Buffalo has a pretty solid roster, as we know, Steve, pre-draft, and while welcoming some top-end talent from this year's draft pool is necessary and helpful, what about some of the team's day three draft capital? Do they really need both fives, their sixth, and their seventh this year? What do you think?
Well, you never know, because you look down at the history of it, and it's hard to find a really good player at that level. But the Bills have also found starters as rookie free agents, even below that level, that, you know, finger quotes that level. But it depends all on what's there for you to take with that capital. What do you get in return? If you get a higher pick, perhaps next year, we've talked about the fact that next year is a year where you're going to have to extend Josh Allen, you're going to have to extend Tremaine Edmonds, and you're going to need cap space. Rookies help with cap space.
Yep.
And you get draft picks, you're going to have some really cost-controlled guys that you're going to get able to pick from another pool of players much similar to the one this year. This is a roster that's much more fully formed than any we've had in, what, two decades? This is a team that can win with who they got on the field right this minute. It's going to be hard for a fifth, sixth, or seventh round draft pick to come in and contribute. Perhaps they could come in and contribute on special teams, okay. But getting even on the 53 is going to be a monumental task for some late round picks because of the physicality and the boxes they've got to check to be good enough.
There's another element at play here, too, that I'm not sure too many people are aware of with respect to this year's draft pool, and that is the following, Steve. The NCAA, because of the pandemic, gave college players an extra year of college eligibility if they chose to make use of it. A lot of them have.
Right.
I was stunned when I saw this number, and I'm going to share it with our listeners. In this year's draft pool, there are 657 eligible players to be drafted. That might sound like a big number. It's not. Last year, at this time, do you know how many eligible draft players there were?
I will say 1,200.
1,932.
Oof. Right.
Okay? Now, we all know 1,932 players are not going to get drafted. We know 657 players are not going to get drafted this year. But the point is, the pool is one-third the size of what it usually is. And the general consensus from DraftNicks is this. NFL GMs are going to be giving away day three picks like a cup of water.
Right.
They are going to be saying, hey, you want my sixth this year? Give me a seventh last year or next year.
Right.
Because a seventh next year is probably, in their eyes, going to be more valuable than a sixth this year.
Because they're still going to have another 600 guys, you know, two draft classes behind that draft class next year in the pool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. That's it's an intriguing thought because you never know how it's going to turn out. But
right.
This NCAA, and kudos to the I don't really do this very often.
Give kudos to the NCAA?
Don't get me started.
I won't.
But
we don't have enough time for
right,
that.
We don't have enough time.
That's another show.
But it was the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
With teams that lost entire seasons, teams that are having seasons now. Mm-hmm. I mean, teams are playing seasons now at the lower levels.
Yeah, FCS.
High school here, even here in Buffalo, high schools are playing football right now.
Yep.
It's a topsy-turvy world, and it's really every school and every district and every level of college athletics, high school athletics, are trying to do their best to navigate through, to give their students the best experience they can, to uphold the traditions of the sport and, mm-hmm. and what kids have been looking forward to since they were little, to get up and play their high school sports and college sports. They're doing their best. Giving them an extra year, I don't know if I even want to give them a compliment for it. It is absolutely like a no-brainer to do that.
So with that in mind, knowing the draft pool is thin, just from a pure numbers standpoint, again, one-third the number of players eligible in this draft compared to last year, less than one-third. If we determine the Bills do not necessarily need their last four selections this year, the 2 5s, the 6, and the 7, should they be converted into higher picks this year to move up the board somewhere? And we're talking minor moves. It's not like these picks carry a lot of value.
Right.
Or should they be converted into future draft capital, knowing the need for cheap labor probably on this roster is greater next year in 2022 than it is in 2021?
I think at this point you can afford to push some draft picks into next year. We've talked at length about how difficult this roster is going to be to make, how fully formed it is, the signings that they've made on mm-hmm. the free agent market. And I'll say this as well. One of the aspects of this culture that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have built is that they get guys on this team that are highly motivated to take another kick at the financial can. They want to get a bigger contract. There are a lot of guys on one-year deals. And this year they've got a couple of guys who are not one-year deals, but the end of a good deal, mm-hmm. who want one last contract. That's been a real motivating factor for the roster that the Bills have put together. It's really going to be true this year as well. They're going to have a ton of guys that we love and respect that are going to be on the free agent market after this year. You got to be ready with draft capital and a plan to replace them. And for fans, like we were this year with Matt Milano and John Feliciano and Darrell Williams, we were wringing our hands a little bit, fingers crossed. How are we going to – because we did not believe they could sign – one of those guys, let alone all three of them back here, but they got it done.
Yeah,
but that's where we're going to be next year as well.
Well, if you're 30 or older and you have a fat contract on this roster that goes beyond this year, I don't know how confident you can be. Yeah. You're going to see the end of that contract because the fiscal dynamics of this team's roster is going to get flipped on its head when Josh Allen gets handed the monster contract. And we've seen it across the league, and it happens time and time again. I would be inclined to say, if there is a way you can use some of those later round picks to find a way to get a fourth round pick, trade your draft capital for a fourth round pick this year. Anything after that, if you can flip one of your fives for a six next year, I would do it because the sixth round pick, you can make an argument, will be more valuable than a fifth round pick this year because the pool of talent in general is so thin. And then we also have the fact that this is, you look around the Bills roster, okay, and I know we've discussed this on One Bills Live, our daily show. We assume that Josh is going to get upwards of $40 million a year. We also know there could be an extension for Tremaine Edmonds, as Steve mentioned. That kind of financial commitment is going to demand that the Bills try to save money at other positions. Defensive line, where they're already very heavily invested with a lot of veteran contracts. The offensive line. And maybe, Steve, even wide receiver. Now, it's helped by the fact that a guy like Emmanuel Sanders is on a one-year deal. It's probably a one-and-done type situation in light of the fiscal responsibility that commitments you're going to be making to quarterback and presumably to Tremaine Edmonds. So is extra draft capital in 2022 probably the best way to fill those positions with more affordable players? I don't think it's the only way. Is it the best way? We're talking O-line, D-line, wide receiver.
It's a good question. I think the philosophy's got to be, you got to look at your team, and I think at the end of the season, when you'd look at these guys and who's going to eject, who's going to be off the roster or has a possibility of being off the roster. You got to look at position groups and say, where can we afford it and where can we not? You start there. You start with the football end of it. If it's me, I start with the football end of it, not with the money end of it. And I fit the football end of it and spend the money where the football tells me to spend it, not so much where the financial.
So you're saying how they play in 2021 should be a greater guide. The on-field product should be a greater guide as to who we can afford to part ways with now, who's on the come that we feel can step into a larger role that's already on the roster. Because you're going to have guys still on their rookie contracts in 2022 like Gabriel Davis, Isaiah Hodgins, you know, young players in the receiver pipeline that you can maybe ascend into larger roles provided they look like they're on the right path.
Well, here's the thing, too, and here's why it's hard for you and I sit here and watch this team extremely closely. Where this team ends up, like we're sitting now here in late April, where it's going to be in October, November, December is going to be vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
The players that we thought, wow, this guy's got a chance, have declined. There's some players we haven't even met yet who are going to be, that's our guy. Last year,
Draft picks next week.
think about Dane Jackson last year. We didn't, you know,
yeah.
They pull him. And you and I have some aspirations for him this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to look very different in 8 months. So it's, you can have a plan, but the players and their abilities and their development or deterioration set the plan themselves. Mm-hmm. The players set the plan, and you got to find a way to do what you want to do. And the team has got a real good philosophy. You see a guy, and on the day that you have to make this decision, you evaluate him dispassionately. You set a value and you stick with it.
Yeah.
And the players have gravitated toward wanting to be here to further their career. Levi Wallace, Matt Milano, John Feliciano, Darrell Williams, all of those guys alluded to the fact that the grass isn't greener someplace else.
And they also admitted to taking some financial concessions to re-sign here as well. I mean, they didn't exactly break the bank at their respective positions with their new contracts. They could have got more money elsewhere and said as much.
It's interesting that football has that element because it's the ultimate team game.
Yeah,
and you can see, and I crush baseball all the time.
Oh,
it's a different attitude.
99.5 times out of 100, they're taking more money wherever it is
because it's an individual sport.
In many ways, it is.
An individual sport wrapped around a team. It's your batting average, your ERA, your numbers.
Basketball players don't take discounts either.
Despite the fact that baseball freely throws around the word sacrifice, nobody sacrifices in that sport. It's about you and your skills and abilities.
And maximizing your
revenue. Football is way different than that, and it affects guys' outlook differently about their own career and about the team they're going to play on. They realize in football that because of the difference in the sport, they're going to hurt for these guys, and those guys are going to hurt for them. They're going to risk some their safety. They're going to work hard. They're going to sweat together. They're going to risk injury. Everybody's going to get hurt. And that gives you a level of willingness to concede other things for the guys that are going to sacrifice for you. And I know that's a real generalized and philosophical statement, but it really, where you work and how you're treated in this sport is different. It makes hugely different than it is in other sports.
Well, yeah,
is what I'm trying to say.
And the guys have said it here. Like, I enjoy coming to work here every day. So in a sport where you know probably about mid-season, your body's going to feel like crap every single day coming to work, I don't want to be miserable going to work too. Yeah, I want to be happy about the people I'm around. I want to feel good about the goals we have as a group and that we can attain them because everybody's pulling the rope the same way I want to. That counts.
Here's the thing.
In football.
It's like this. You literally wake up during seasons. I remember this. You're going in there and, man, I need somebody to help me make me feel better. I need something. You got to give me some treatment, a massage. I got to get something because I should be in the hospital.
I'm hanging
right now. Yeah, I feel like I got thrown out of the back of a truck. Think about being in that condition and going into a place where you don't like anybody. And
Nobody inspires you.
It's you against the world. And all these other guys could not possibly care less about your condition.
It's hard to summon up the energy.
It's hard. Your emotional investment goes away. It goes away. But if you got guys that are pulling for and are for you, and kind of a family atmosphere, people who want you to come in, they want to make you better. They want to help you. They want to make you feel better. They want to make you play better. They want you to succeed. The physicality and the pain that these guys go through is the difference maker, because it does affect how you feel about your job, what you're willing to do for that job, and the organization. Because if you're going to go through that kind of physical duress and nobody cares, give me the money and I'll show up when you make me.
Yeah. It counts. It counts in a way that I don't think anybody can really measure.
It counts in this sport like no other sport.
Yeah. All right, good discussion there. Time for this week's edition of The Numbers Game, Steve. Last week we had you try to guess the most popular position pick in the last 10 years at pick 30, which we learned was cornerback. I think there was one other position it was tied with. Now we're going to widen the pool and ask for you to give us the most popular position pick for pick 61 in round two over the last 20 years. We're widening
pick
the
61.
Swath. Oh yeah, this is just for you know what's and giggles. Okay,
all right.
It's more of a
60. So I got like
22
spots.
It's a little ridiculous. I'll give it to you, but I'm strapped for.
I got 22 spots. I'll take kicker and punter off the board.
Yeah, that's a wise move.
That's all right. So I got 22 positions that I'm gonna add. Well, not really. I got position. Can I go groups? Right.
Yeah, we're doing position groups. I'm not asking you for people.
So safeties rather than corners.
Yeah, we break up safeties and corners. We keep O-line and D-line together.
Okay.
Okay. So
wide receiver, tight end,
just so you know what you're looking
at. All right, here we go. All right, I'm going to say, first of all,
popular positions at pick 61.
Down the list of money positions, second round, I'm going to say offensive line.
Offensive line tied for third. Three such choices over the last 20 years at pick 61.
That's third.
Three players tied for third.
All right. The other one would be, I'm going under the radar. I'm going to say safety.
Safety also tied for third. Three there.
How many people are tied for third?
There are three position groups. O-line, safety, and one more.
Linebacker.
No, it is... not linebacker. There's been one linebacker taken over the last 20 years with the 61st pick in the draft, and you're not going to know who the hell he is. His name was Jonas Mouton.
You got me. All right, so I've got O-line and safety. I'm going to say...
we're tied for third. Yeah, we're still looking for the top two spots, which are tied for first. Four players at each of these two positions were taken with the 61st pick over the last 20 years.
Defensive tackle.
Is not defensive tackle. There has only been one defensive lineman, Steve, taken in the last 20 years with the 61st pick, and it was taken by the Buffalo Bills. Pick 61, and I'm going to tell you it was a while ago.
Yeah. Was it Schobel?
No.
Kelsey?
Schobel was the 47th pick. Kelsey, I think, was somewhere in the 50s.
Close. I'm getting there.
You're getting close. He played with those guys. This guy played with those two players.
I have no idea.
And the Bills actually traded up to pick 61 to get this guy.
Really?
Played for about 6-7 years. BYU. Had a brother in the league.
Yeah. The long snapper.
Who was a long snapper
John
for
Denny.
The Dolphins.
Ryan Denny.
Yes, Ryan Denny was the only defensive lineman taken with pick 61 in the last 20 years by the Buffalo Bills. But we're still missing, Steve, the top two position groups taken with the 61st pick over the last 20 seasons.
All right, I'll go with the money. Cornerback.
Cornerback is tied for first. Four players taken with the 61st pick, including last season. Christian Fulton, the LSU corner taken by the Tennessee Titans.
All right.
The other guys taken with that pick, Cyrus Jones a few years ago by the Patriots, Sean Smith back in 2009, and Patrick Lee. Those are your four corners taken in the last 20 years with pick 61.
I will take, the next one is wide receiver.
Wide receiver is correct. Good job, Steve. Right. Tied for first, four such players. DJ Chark by the Jaguars a couple of years ago. some good names here, Steve. Are you ready for this? DJ Chark, good player for the Jags. He just plays on a team that gets no coverage.
Right.
Good player. Allen Robinson.
Oh, yeah. Really good player.
Vincent Jackson, who we lost this past January, unfortunately. Yeah. And Andre Dyson, who is most famously known for carrying the ball into the end zone on home run throwback. So those are the top two positions, corner and wide receiver, with the 61st pick in the draft. I think the Bills are more likely to find a corner at pick 61 than they are at pick 30. What do you think about that?
Well,
I'm worried. I'm really convinced the run's going to happen in the 20s.
More likely to take one in 61 rather than 30, but not find. There's going to be more guys on the board at 30 than there are.
Well, yeah, I just think the value is not going to match up for them at corner.
Right.
Because I think the run will have happened.
Do you think five? First of all, what do you think of Caleb Farley? Say your doctors sign off on him.
He is the ultimate wild. Oh, if the doctors sign off on him, right. I'm running the card up.
Okay. What? All right.
Running the card up.
All right. I'm with you, though. I think if one of those five drop to 30, the Bills grab.
Or do they make a small move up to get in on the party?
Or do they take a really good edge?
The edge value is probably going to be there.
All right.
That's what I'm thinking.
All right. We'll see.
Okay. We have to turn our attention now to our guest this week. It is the architect of the draft guide called The Beast. It's NFL draft analyst Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Thanks for giving us some time, and we're going to jump right into this because we had Brandon Bean, who gave his pre-draft press conference yesterday with the media, as most general managers do this time of year, and I was struck by his description of the medical holes that are out there on players this year with no combine. It is full-on scramble mode for 32 teams to get all the medical T's crossed and I's dotted on these players. With that in mind, Dane, do you think this might be one of the most conservative drafts in terms of how general managers pick players this year than we've seen in a while?
I think that's a very fair assumption. And it's not just the not having the combine. We have to remember, too, area scouts have not been on the road in the fall to talk to the trainers and the strength staff and get all these little details about, oh, he missed two games last year. What was that about? Or, who's really spending time in the weight room and who's spending time with treatment and getting better and taking care of their body. So there's a lot of things, pieces of the puzzle that we usually have in a normal draft process that we don't have this year. The combine obviously being the big one, they try to supplement that with, each prospect going to a local medical facility to get treatment, to get a full evaluation. And then about 150 players have gone to Indianapolis here the last 3 weeks to get a more thorough evaluation with NFL doctors. But it's late. First of all, it's late in the process. And it's funny, I was talking to a scout last week about how going to draft meetings this week, how nervous he is. He's crossing his fingers, crossing his toes that we're not going to find out about, one of his, player that we gave a high grade to, all of a sudden find out he's got a bad back or something about his shoulder. And there's no, arguing with the team doctor, the medical staff. If they say you can't draft him, there's no debate. You take him off the list. And so the medical part of this entire process is certainly something that we're piecing together, a lot of late information. And I think it's fair to say, we're going to see a lot of teams. And it's not just the medicals, it's the character stuff too. There's fewer chances to get to know these players, really missing those 30 visits. Each team in a normal draft process can invite 30 players to your facility where you can spend, 36 hours with them, get to know them as people, not just as players and what you see on tape. Just get a sense if they're going to vibe with your culture, get a vibe with how they interact with your coaches and people around the football building. So the character, the medical, two very important parts of the evaluation process. We have a lot of that information, especially teams with their resources, but it's just different than past years. So to say that maybe they'd be a little more conservative this year, I think that's a fair statement.
Well, you put in the work to put together your 7-round mock draft. I'm going to ask you off the top. Give us your take on which positions on this draft board are rich and which ones are scarce.
Well, the scarce is easy. That's defensive tackle. It is one of the worst defensive tackle classes we've seen in a long time. We're going to see a few guys go early. Christian Barmore of Alabama and Levi Onwuzurike from Washington. They'll probably be top 50 picks. But then there's a big gap after that. And a few players that you like maybe sneak in the top 100, but the depth just isn't there. You're not, if you want a defensive tackle, you better get your guy early because you're not going to be able to wait. On the flip side, you look at wide receiver. It's another strong class. You look at pass rusher. We don't have that top 10 pass rusher this year, that Chase Young or that Myles Garrett, that no doubt about it, top five pick. But it's once you get to the back half of round one and into the second round, it's a pretty strong group. And there's a lot of interesting yet flawed pass rushers that I think, you know, Buffalo's right in the mix with some of those guys. I think you look at corner. It's another strong group at cornerback. And I think you have to mention quarterback just because we're going to set some quarterback records probably this year. If we see quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, first time that's ever happened. If we have five quarterbacks going to the top 10, that would be the first time that has ever happened. And if we have at least seven quarterbacks go in the first two rounds, that's something else that has never happened before that has at least a decent chance of happening in this draft. So quarterback, pass rusher, cornerback, wide receiver, and then offensive tackle as well. It's worth mentioning offensive tackle and really offensive line as a whole. It's a really strong offensive line group.
So, Dane, taking the edge rusher situation a step further here, you know, you mentioned that the Bills, in terms of where they're picking, they'll be in the range, presumably, to have some viable choices at that position. And we know with Jerry Hughes in the final year of his contract, Mario Addison with a voidable year in 2022 on his deal, they got to kind of have a little bit of an influx of youth there to pair with A.J. Epenesa from last year. But as you mentioned, all these guys have some flaws. So who do you feel the best about down in that range? You know, you're talking, well, I don't know, maybe Jalen Phillips may not be there now, but there's a guy that walked away from football due to concussions. What's his commitment to the game? Then you've got Greg Rousseau, who opted out last year and didn't look all that good at his pro day. And then you've got a guy like Joe Tryon, and I think he didn't get a lot of playing time this year. So if you got three guys like that to choose from, are any one of those guys, and Jason Owe, whose production isn't there, even though his measurables are off the charts. So maybe just give me your assessment of those four in particular, and if there are guys you'd shy away from more than another in that group.
Yeah, and that's a great, you know, four names right there that are really intriguing and kind of like we set it up, interesting yet flawed. And with Jason Owe, to me, it might be the most interesting and one of the most interesting in the entire draft. He's the freakiest of the freaks, 6'5", 260 pounds, ran a 4.37 in a 40-yard dash, 39.5-inch vert, under 7 seconds in the three cone. And you see that on film. He's not just a great tester. You see that on the field. And when you watch him, yeah, he didn't have any sacks, but, you know, throw on the Indiana tape and he is consistently getting to the backfield. He is consistently affecting what the quarterback is doing and disrupting that rhythm of the offense. So, you know, obviously you want your quarter or your pass rusher to get to the quarterback and put up big sack numbers. But what is the main goal of a pass rusher? That's to disrupt the quarterback and affect what they're doing. And I think Jason Owe can do that, even though he's going to be, you know, I'm sure if Jason Owe were to be the pick, you're going to hear a lot of fans say, oh, zero sack, so they blew it. He's a really, really good player, and I think he'll be a better pro than college player. Jalen Phillips is a tough one just because of the concussion history and what that means for his future. I think if you're going to go just based on the field, he's a top 10 to 12 pick in this draft. You see flashes that remind you of a Nick Bosa because he understands how to use his hands. He has a rush plan with how he's going to get to the quarterback and break down the rhythm of blockers. He can win with power. He can win with quickness. There's a lot to like about Jalen Phillips as a talent. But when you factor in that, yeah, UCLA told him, hey, we can't clear you. You need to medically retire after three diagnosed concussions. That's obviously not something you just overlook. That's something that has to go into your final process. The medical history is long with him and just making sure that you're comfortable with that. His teammate at Miami, but he actually never played with him because Gregory Rousseau opted out of this past year. Rousseau is really interesting because basically 1 year of production, 1 year of tape, 6'6.5", 266 pounds. He was a safety and wide receiver most of his life up until he grew out of those positions. moved to the defensive line as a senior in high school, and he missed his first year at Miami. He was hurt. His second year, he was second in the FBS behind only Chase Young in sacks. So you love the production that he put up. But then he opts out this past year, and we're kind of left with some questions about, all right, you know, we love the size, we love the length, he has pretty good get off, but he's not a bendy rusher. And in fact, a lot of his production came when he reduced inside over the A gap, and he was able to use that quick first step and use that length to beat up on some interior blockers. So there's still a lot of questions with Rousseau in terms of patching together his rush moves, and can he, you know, does he have the counters necessary to win in different ways? So I would not be surprised at all if Rousseau is available for the Bills there in that late first round, or even if he would fall to the second round. And then Joe Tryon, just to finish out, you know, that group of pass rushers, another opt out, but a guy that he looks like an action figure, 6'5", 260. That's what you want it to look like. 4.65 in the 40-yard dash. Actually, his testing numbers are very, very similar to Marcus Davenport, who was a top 15 pick 3 years ago for the Saints. I think it's a similar type of projection where there's a lot of raw traits, and you're thinking about, okay, what can he be for us, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now? There's a lot of things that you can work with him, a lot of foundation traits that you want at the position.
One more thing with respect to edge rushers, Dane, and that deals with skill set here. With more and more quarterbacks who can make plays off script, extend plays, how much more of a premium do you think there is on pass rushers who are quote-unquote long chase players and have change of direction agility? Because it seems like more and more you're going to need that in your edge rushers if a play goes 6 or 7 seconds because the quarterback's running all over the yard.
No question about it. And that's where the three-cone drill comes into play, which really helps gauge a player's redirection skills. And then when you watch the tape, okay, does he have the motor? Is he a guy that, you know, once he misses in the pocket, he kind of shuts it down a little bit? Or is he continuing to, you know, hit the gas and chase and make plays from the backside? I think this draft has a few of those guys at pass rushers who really stand out for their motor. You know, Peyton Turner from Houston's one of those guys. He'd be a second round option. Mm-hmm. You look at Joseph Osai at Texas, relentless pursuit player. He never shuts it down. He flips that switch when he's on the field and he doesn't know how to turn it off. And so there are some questions about him just in terms of being a consistent pass rusher. There are zero questions about his effort. And that's where what you really like about Osai and maybe considering him at some point in the second round. So that is definitely part of the process when you're looking at these pass rushers.
One of the other positions that Bills fans and this roster seems to be lacking is a cornerback number two. You get down to the 30th pick, or perhaps a spot where the 30th pick could be traded for the 34th or 36th pick, somewhere in there to get into the second round, pick up another pick. What kind of cornerbacks are we looking at the bottom of the first round? Or maybe at the bottom of the first round, maybe a couple of picks ahead of 30. So if the Bills got a guy they really liked, they jump up to 25 or 26. What range of guy are we looking at there, and how many corners are going to be gone before that?
Well, we think Patrick Surtain out of Alabama and J.C. Horn, South Carolina, both those two players should be off the board somewhere in the top 15 to 16 picks. And then where does Greg Newsome go? The Northwestern corner, who 6 foot, 192 pounds, you know, a really good athlete. He's a route magnet, stays attached down the field. He's a guy that has missed at least three games each of the last 3 years. That's kind of the issue with him in terms of, okay, nothing major, but these soft tissue injuries, that adds up. And we want guys that can be physical, be aggressive, hold up, and stay on the field. So Greg Newsome's not going to be for everybody. Could he be in the mix there? Because at a certain point in the first round, the value is just tremendous. And so I think Greg Newsome is a possibility for maybe, you know, if you want to move up a few spots. After that, it gets really interesting. Caleb Farley, Virginia Tech, we talked about how teams are being more conservative. Caleb Farley is tough to figure out where he's going to go, because I think based on just talent, he's in the top 10. He might be the most talented defensive player in this draft. A former high school quarterback, goes to Virginia Tech as a wide receiver, moves to corner in 2018, a position he never played before, and he had two picks in his first career game in the season opener against Florida State. You watch the speed, especially for a guy that size. He's over 6'2", 33 and a half inch arms. I mean, he has the arm length that makes a lot of offensive linemen jealous. Speed is outstanding. The burst is different. You know, you don't see guys with that type of burst very often. And then just the natural ball instincts that he shows. So, if he has a clean bill of health, we're looking at Caleb Farley as a top 10 pick. Easy. You factor in he had an ACL when he first arrived in 2017, and then two back procedures over the last 3 years, including most recently one in March, that he should be fully recovered and be back on the field at some point during training camp. But you have to factor in, okay, long-term, what does that mean? Is it more likely to flare up? Is there something that's going to be a long-term problem? That's where the medical information really comes into play, and each team doctor is going to be a little different. Each team's appetite for risk will be a little different. So Caleb Farley is really a tough guy to figure out just in terms of where he's going to go. He could go 17. He could fall out of the second round. I wouldn't be surprised at either one of those outcomes just because the medical information will be digested differently by each team and each, with how they're going to set up their roster. After those four players, it'll get really interesting because I think that there's several round two corners that it's kind of similar to that pass rush conversation where those round two corners are really talented yet flawed in a certain way. You look at two Georgia corners with Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell. Tyson Campbell, 6'1", 193, a 4'3 athlete. That's how you draw it up. That's what you want your corners to look like. But I tell you what, SEC quarterbacks, they were not afraid to throw at him last year on film. And a part of that is he just couldn't find the football. He's in phase, he's in position, but he can't get his head turned around and he can't use his length to disrupt the pass. And so that's a big issue with him. But again, is that something that's learned? Is that something he can get better at? Maybe in some respect, in some areas, but that's where the opinions on a Tyson Campbell are very different. Kelvin Joseph out of Kentucky. 5'11 and a half, 197 pounds, a 4'3 athlete. He's got some concerns off the field that teams need to sort through. So all these corners are really talented and all deserving of top 50 consideration. But you look at them and there's maybe one or two things that you point to, and that's where each team's going to look at it a little differently in terms of breaking down the weaknesses and where they feel comfortable drafting each player.
Yeah, and I think Caleb Farley might be the most fascinating player in this entire draft, not only because of the ability he brings to the table, as you mentioned, Dane, but he pretty much runs the gamut of all the deficiencies that the scouting community has this year.
Right.
He opted out, and for an understandable reason. He lost a parent to cancer, I believe, and didn't want to lose another one due to a COVID infection. So I get the opt-out. I understand that. But he's got medical, and he's got a limited body of work. I mean, he's got the trifecta there, so it's really going to be fascinating to see how much he slides.
But he tests off the charts.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
that's the dichotomy.
Well, and we didn't get a chance to see his exact testing numbers because of that injury, which is unfortunate because I think he absolutely would have blown it up. But no, you're right. I mean, I think no character concerns. But besides that, there everything else is a worry. But if you told me that in 2 years he's one of the top 10 corners in the league, I could buy it. I could see a path to get to that point. And so high risk, high reward, this guy, he's the poster player for that.
Yeah, and just one more question on corners here, Dane, because we know you said all of those guys that you just mentioned could be top 50 picks. We know the Bills in the second round aren't in the top 50. They pick at 61. Yeah. I know you mocked them, Tyson Campbell, and that would be a nice option to have that late in round two. But are there other names that figure to be closer to the bottom of round two that you think would be in play for the Bills? I really like Paulson Adebo's tape, but some people have him in the top of round three, but he just looks like that long run support corner that the Bills like in their system. Just your thoughts on him and anybody else that you think could be there at the bottom of round two at corner.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how early these corners go. There's so many of them that one or two of them is going to slip a little bit, to the end of round two, maybe even into round three. It's certainly possible just because of the sheer volume of corners that we have this year in that second round mix. Ifeatu Melifonwu was another one. But with Paulson Adebo, another opt-out, did not play this year. But I tell you what, if you want a player that looks the part and has ball production, he's your guy. 38 passes defended in 2 years at Stanford, 8 interceptions, 6'1", 198 pounds, ran a 4.44 in the 40-yard dash, 6.69 in the three cone, which is a fantastic time for anybody, let alone a guy that's 6'1", 200 pounds. So with Paulson Adebo, now I don't think his tape is as consistent or as glowing maybe as the testing numbers and the production that he's had. because once he gets beat, it's tough for him to recover. You know, you could throw on the tape against UCF in 2019 and Gabe Davis, a guy you guys know well, a couple of those double moves, Paulson Adebo was left kind of grabbing at air, and it really had no answer for Gabe Davis, who's a good player. So, you know, no shame in, you know, losing some reps to him. But that's kind of the rub with Adebo, is he's a little leggy, a little upright. And when he does have those false steps, it's really tough for him to recover. But you want to bet on a guy with the size, the foot agility. You know, those are the traits that you want. He's a smart guy. Confidence is there. So there's a lot going for Adebo that at this late part of round two, even in round three, you feel comfortable rolling the dice on a talent like that.
One last one from me, Dana. Thanks for being with us. Where do the top couple of running backs go? How early do they get picked in this draft? You know, ATN, Najee Harris, and Williams. Is that right, Williams?
Javonte, yeah.
Javonte.
Yeah, Javonte Williams out of North Carolina, right. And I think that you look at the Steelers at 24. Everything points to them and Najee Harris as being just a logical fit. You look at the Steelers and really having a small window here with Ben as the quarterback and really going for it. How much a Najee Harris, a guy that's ready to step in right now and help an NFL offense, how much that would help, especially with his ability out of the backfield as a pass catcher. I think that fits Pittsburgh. It almost makes too much sense that it won't happen at 24. And then after that, I tell you what, I'd be surprised if we had another running back in the first round. It's always possible. We've seen surprises before. I think it's more likely we see a Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, maybe in that second round, that early second round. You look at the Falcons picking in the early second round. They need help at running back. The Miami Dolphins, another one. I think that would be a logical landing spot for either ETN or a Javonte Williams to come in and be kind of the bell cow that they've been looking for. ETN's more of your slasher, the home run hitter, speed. Javonte Williams is a guy that just wants to break tackles. Former high school linebacker, moved to running back late. His ability, he's kind of like a compact version of Leonard Fournette. And his ability to break tackles is really uncanny. So I think Javonte Williams is definitely well-liked with teams and would not be surprised to see all three go in the top 40, although I don't know that all three are going to get in the first round.
And then the last one for me, Dane. I know everybody loves sleepers. You unveiled your list of sleepers recently on The Athletic. So why don't you just pass along some of those lesser-known names that fans might be interested in come day three when they probably don't recognize one guy from the next?
Well, yeah, I encourage people to check out the article on The Athletic. I go through 10 names that were not combine invites. You know, we didn't have the combine this year, but we still had the combine list. But my favorite guy on that list, Jacob Harris out of UCF. Love the background, former soccer player who decided to play football as a senior in high school just to, you know, be with his buddies and have fun. And he got that itch. You know, he goes to Florida Gulf Coast to play soccer. After a week, he says, I want to play football. Walks on at Western Kentucky. But he'd get a little homesick, so he walks on at UCF and gets better and better as the years went on. This past year as a tight end slash big wide receiver, big slot, had 8 touchdowns, and you saw him, it started to really, the light bulb really kind of illuminate for him. And what you really like about Jacob Harris is he can also play special teams. He's 6'5", 220, 4'4'0 athlete, 6'5", and a 3-cone. And he can play special teams coverages. He had double-digit tackles in college. So you draft him 4th or 5th round. And while you're developing him as that big slot receiver, as maybe a guy that could develop into a tight end, he's going to make plays for you on special teams. So he's going to earn that roster spot. So every year we've got sleepers that come through and maybe surprise us. And this year is no different. So hopefully people go check out that article.
Yeah, I see him as a receiver. I mean, I know he's a willing blocker, but – he is rail. He looks like a rail out there with his height and his length. I mean, I just can't see him lining up in line. I mean, maybe he gets in the way of somebody, but yeah, I think he's big slot all the way at the NFL level. Dane, one more thing. How people can get The Beast. How do they get their hands on that?
All you need is an Athletic subscription, and it's included as part of that. And I think right there makes The Athletic worth it with the draft guide. If you like the NFL draft at all, I promise you, 0% chance you'll be disappointed. If you like details, all the NFL verified pro day data is in there. All the background information, all the metrics, that's the production, and of course the analysis. So over 400 reports. So this is the thing you want at your side during draft weekend, as the picks are coming off the board. I promise you, 0% chance you'll be disappointed with it.
Yeah, I don't do a draft without it. 267 pages of brilliance this year.
Dane, thanks, man. Appreciate you. Good luck. Enjoy this draft. I know it's kind of a downer when it's finally over after all the work that goes into it. But man, I'll tell you, we appreciate it.
Well, I can't wait to see my kids again and my family and all that. So, I'll be looking forward to it. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Steve, as we close out this episode of One Bills Light, we have a new exercise that we like to call My Best Guess. As we know, Steve, the Bills have three picks on day one and day two of the draft at 30, 61, and 93. With your best guess, what do you think the three position groups are that are addressed with those first three selections? We just had you play the numbers
game. I think I can nail this.
Okay.
The position groups are cornerback, edge rusher, offensive line.
That's your best guess. Okay. I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be a wild card in here somewhere. That's the only thing that is giving me pause. I am going to say my best guess is edge rusher, corner, but there is, I don't know what it is,
come
man.
On.
There's
say
something,
it.
There's something that's just telling me for some reason, and I have no rhyme or reason for this whatsoever, but I think there's going to be something that's going to be a little wacky and off the board. So just for lack of a better position to pick, I am going to say safety. I don't know why, but it's just something in the back of my mind. So I'm going to say corner, edge rusher, safety instead of O-line. I want an O-lineman because I think they're going to need one.
Yeah.
So I think that could very well happen, but for some reason I see them pulling a surprise on everybody, and I'll just say safety because of the value that's there in rounds two and three at that position.
Yeah, and it, safety, do you think there's a chance? And there's been a big hubbub around after the Brandon Bean presser for the draft that, you know, they had a big conversation about running backs. Another for the third year in a row, running back in the third round, depending on who falls. I mean, yeah, none of the three running backs that everybody's looking at, ATN, Najee Harris, and Williams, none of those guys are going to be there at whatever, 93. But I know this. It never ceases to amaze me that when the Bills do grab guys, sign free agents from the NFL, you know, like even free agency in the first of free agency or in the draft, it never ceases to amaze me. They pull a guy that I didn't know about that turns out to be really good.
Yeah. And there's some nice safeties there in that second, third round range. That's kind of the sweet spot for safeties. And I don't know, just for some reason, end of day two, I could see him pick 93. You know, that Syracuse kid that I like a lot, Andre Sisco. That kid is a ball hawk, man. He is a player.
Right.
I like him a lot. And there's some other safeties that I think will be available there at the end of round three. So that's the only reason I think that could factor into the equation. Per your running back argument in round one, I'm not saying the Bills wouldn't consider a running back, especially if someone like ETN is still on the board at 30. But I think the only way they put his name on the card is if the value at edge rusher is gone and the value at corner is gone. If their board is completely wiped out at those two positions, then I could see that being a real possibility. But absent that scenario, I think they address one of their more. And here's why. Because running back, you have two players still on their rookie contracts at the position, and you have a veteran who is a home run threat in Matt Breida on the roster. At defensive line, particularly edge, you've got a 33-year-old Jerry Hughes in the last year of his contract. You got Mario Addison, age 34 season, last year of his contract with a voidable year left. And there's not a ton behind them.
It's Daryl Johnson and A.J. Epineza.
Right, and some reserve future free agents, Mike Love, some other guys.
Right, guys with experience.
But you need a stone-cold killer in the pipeline there.
Yes.
So, to me, that overrides anything that you feel about running back in round one. And the edge rush value should be there at 30 for them to take somebody.
I would submit this. I think the team is in a position, a unique. Say, for instance, I'll take it the corner position, where they can look at a guy, and like the two guys, the two corners from Georgia.
Tyson Campbell, Eric Stokes.
Right. Really fast, really athletic kids, but, you know, got some warts on their game, either you name whatever it is you want,
yeah,
or any other position. the Bills could say and get to know these guys and over through the course of their evaluation think that see something in them that says this is a guy that's going to have a good career because he's committed to being better.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Bean said in his draft press conference, he said, listen, we're looking long-term rather than short-term. So if they think they've got a guy with some skills, with some ability, who's the right DNA, take him a little higher than maybe you should have, knowing that in 6 months, he's with your coaching and your culture, he's going to be vastly different than he is now. So that tells me that could be either an edge rusher like that or a corner like that, a guy who, when they draft him, it'll be a little bit of a reach or a snooze. I'll be like, I don't know. He tested well, but you know he doesn't have the great tape. He doesn't have this. And the Bills will believe that their culture and this kid's inner workings will take him to another level. I could see that happening in this draft big time because they're not in a big hurry for these guys to come in and make waves.
Jump right on the field and play 50 snaps.
So if they got a guy with some physical tools, like one of the edge rushers we've seen.
Tryon, Oweh.
Oweh is a great example. Tryon is a great example. They've got some guys.
Even the Rousseau kid who people are knocking right now.
Right, the kid that played in Miami
with
Phillips.
Yeah.
There's a ton of guys like that. And think about it. F.A. Obada is exactly that, the guy they signed. So they're, you know, they think long term because they really believe, and it is their culture to make these guys better every day.
Yep.
So that's the crucial element of the whole thing, and I think that is going to be the deciding factor when they get to this draft. How good can this guy get? Not how good he is today.
For our next My Best Guess, we pose the following. Going into the draft, the Bills have 7 total picks. How many picks do they end up with in the form of drafted players coming out of it?
Ooh.
Do they have 7 when the draft's over or no?
I say no.
I say no as well. How many do you think they come out with?
5.
I was going to say 5, too.
I think
they only have 5 players drafted. I think they part ways with a couple. I think the number could be even as low as 4.
Their last 5 draft picks together add up to about 190 points, and that's enough to get you... Yeah, it's nothing.
It's nothing.
It's nothing. That'll get you from...
It's a pittance.
Right. That is the equivalent of a mid... Or no, bottom third round pick. Like pick 80.
Yeah.
That's what that equals. You know, they could throw... But that includes their own pick at 93.
This is going to be the challenge.
So they could
that.
Take all those picks at 93 and the lack of buying and jump up 10 spots.
Yeah.
13 this spots is, in the third
This
round.
Is the challenge for Brandon Bean this year. He's going to be trying to get rid of day 3 picks.
Yep.
So too is everybody else.
That's right.
Who's going to be able to pull it off is going to be the big question. That'll do it for this edition of One Bills Light. Don't forget to subscribe so you know whenever a new episode drops. And remember, when there isn't enough time for One Bills Live, there's always enough time for One Bills Light. For Steve Tasker, I'm Chris Brown. Enjoy the draft, everybody.